Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Monday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a great day, enjoying the 70 degrees and sunshine, as we sit here in Middle Tennessee. Darren McFarland, that's me down here on the south side of town in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick holding fort in East Nashville. Chase McCabe out in Bellevue on the west side. And Marquise Munson back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios. Powered by RumbleOn.com. Every Monday at this time, we head east. We check in with Vince Ferrara. His Twitter handle is at Vince Sports. Give him a follow. It's worth it. And he's with the Sports Animal, WNML, there in Knoxville. Vinny, how you doing? How was your weekend?
Good, gentlemen. It was fun. We had live sporting events with the event singular with the draft over 3 days, and that was a lot of fun, trying to track the UT guys and just seeing how it all transpired. We did a live show during the first round, so that was a ton of fun to do radio during that. And then, you know, obviously last night with The Last Dance, that was fun. I did catch up on the first two episodes since I talked to you last Monday, and then watched them live last night. So that was as usual, really just captivating to watch those. So a lot of good stuff, and you know, weather wasn't great, but still was a fun weekend. Hope you guys had a good one too.
I hope some of these college football coaches took notice to this draft this weekend. And I even said this to Derek Mason on Friday when he joined us, Vanderbilt's football coach. You know, these football coaches that think that you need to work around the clock, and you know, I hope that there's some things we take away from, you know, quarantine time and being cooped up in the house and away from everything with this virtual draft, and you know, getting to see general managers and coaches with their family around and being a part of the draft process, which we never would have ever thought or envisioned before this draft. And they realize that people actually like that because it makes them, you know, it puts them in a different light rather than, you know, some of the pictures that we paint sometimes for some of these guys. I hope we will hold them in less regard. Doesn't mean that they're not good people, but they're football coaches or they're football GMs. We shouldn't, you know, think that they're gods because they're not. There's people out there doing some really, really good work in this country, and I hope we start recognizing that a little bit more when we get through this. Do you think that is the case? Do you think some of these coaches, now that they've spent more time at home, maybe we'll value that a little bit more, or is this just going to make them run to the office even faster?
Well, I think definitely for the whole league, for the commissioner, for the coaches, for the players, because I think a lot of fans and a lot of people view athletes just like they're robots and they're not people as well. So I think this was absolutely a humanization draft the way it was executed, and I thought they did an amazing job to pull it off. But, I think for some you will see them try to incorporate some more family time and have this be a part of things moving forward. I mean, a great example even before the draft was John Robinson. They've been doing a virtual draft, their draft board, before this was ever incorporated by the NFL. And so that's allowed them, I'm sure, to work more efficiently there with the Titans and not have to rely on everyone actually physically being in a conference room to, you know, move and adjust the board. Now you can be more efficient with your time and then be around your family more. That's just one little aspect of it. But I think everybody has to adjust. And they're probably going to be able to find ways to do more of the family time while using their time wiser instead of having to stay in the office until 3 a.m. Everyone's going to have to adjust. And I do think the smart coaches will. Some you know how they are. They're just not going to be able to. They're probably miserable right now, and they're never going to be able to adjust. But I think this has opened everybody's eyes. Look at the commit. She said, "Yeah, this. You know, we found out things that we want to incorporate moving forward in the draft." So I think the smart ones will make that adjustment, and I think overall that'll be healthier, especially for those coaches that, you know, have high paying jobs and obviously a lot of stress, but they can still get things accomplished remotely.
You sent me a great stat over the weekend that I so wanted to put out there and give you credit for, but I didn't know if you wanted me to or not, so I held off for today. In 2015, the Vols had zero players drafted. In 2016, the Vols had zero players drafted. In 2017, it was a good year. Six players drafted. 2018, three players drafted. 2019, zero. This year, two. That's 11 players in the last 6 years. Take out the 2017 season, that's five players in the last 5 years. Okay, if you take out that 2017 season. LSU just had 14 players drafted in 3 days. I mean, if that doesn't put things in perspective of the gap right now between the haves and where UT is, I don't know what else you can say. I mean, they used to get players, obviously, as we know, in the heyday, drafted all the time. The draft was littered with UT players. How do they change that, and how much does that get talked about in Knoxville? I mean, it's very clear that there has been a lack of talent issue in Knoxville. I mean, that's showing you right there.
It is. There's a lot of layers to it there, and it is something that people talk about, especially right now as we've gone into the draft, because there haven't been as many things to talk about. But it is an area of frustration. And then not only when we point these things out, and then you start to really look at who's in the league, and you look at where they came from, it is even more frustrating for fans. And obviously a lot of people make – the biggest example of it is the lack of use of Alvin Kamara in the NFL, but he was still drafted. I think people knew what they had there. What's amazing is how many players were signed by Butch Jones that are in the NFL right now. If you look at there's 38 in the league right now that finished their career at Tennessee. And then there's eight more that started at Tennessee that went to another school to finish off their college career and are in the NFL as well. So out of those 46, 27 of them guys were signed by Butch Jones. 27. And that's with low number of draft picks. You know why? Because a big portion of those guys are getting into the NFL as undrafted free agents and then being coached up in the league and sticking. Of the 38 Tennessee players in the league right now, the ones that finished their careers at Tennessee, 17 were undrafted.
Wow.
What does that tell you? Wow. That tells you they didn't have productive enough careers in college. They had ability, didn't have productive enough careers. Now they're getting coached, and they're able to stick. Emmanuel Mosley with the San Francisco 49ers had a terrific year. You had two undrafted rookie free agents that, yes, they were coached their final year by Jeremy Pruitt and Shy Tuttle and Kyle Phillips, but they also had a lot of inconsistent tape before that, so they didn't get drafted. But they started to develop a little bit, and then they got to the league, and they got an opportunity and a good situation, and they stuck. Tuttle with the Saints and Kyle Phillips with the Jets, and both of them even started some games this year. And the list goes on, long list of undrafted free agents that have stuck in the league that were originally signed by Butch Jones. So I think it's another reminder that Butch Jones did sign some talented players, but they weren't developed enough. They didn't win enough games with those NFL caliber players. And now that they are getting the coaching in the National Football League, you're kind of getting what you hoped for as Tennessee fans, that you were going to get in college. And I think how's it going to change to your question, or when's it going to change? I think you're already seeing the development on a different level under Jeremy Pruitt. And then as players that he signs that fit and they're developed and they win games, because you saw it in the draft over the 3 days, they want guys that come from programs that win and compete on the highest level. And the SEC, obviously, with 63, brings that. So they got to win. They got to be a part of winning and then be developed and have that on tape and be the right guys in recruiting also. So I think that's where that development was clearly what's missing from a lot of those players. I think that will be filled for Pruitt. It's still going to take time to cycle through and get those guys that are highly thought of. Pruitt has them, but they're underclassmen for the most part right now, except for Trey Smith.
It goes to show you Butch Jones could recruit, and the problem was what he did and his staff did after that. And now we're going to find out with Jeremy Pruitt, because it looks like he is doing this a lot of the same things. He is getting the recruits. I saw last night or over the weekend, Dylan Brooks, the big defensive end, the five-star kid, committed to UT. And so, and by the way, isn't he out of Alabama?
He is.
Yeah. So what is that? So they're getting the kids. Now the question is going to be, what are they going to do with these kids, right? That's the next step is, okay, if he starts getting the talent in here again in Knoxville, then what does he do with that talent?
Well, definitely. But I think that you need the elite players that are developed as well. It's got to be both. If
yep.
they're going to take this program to the highest level and win like fans want and expect and have been missing for a long time, you have to do both. Yeah, Butch had some his fair share of five stars that he brought into the program. A part of his deal as well was that he had a lot of guys leave the program. I mean, look at the example. Eight guys in the NFL right now that are one-time calls. I mean, when I'm keeping track of this, I actually have to separate them because it's such a big list. If it's one or two, you put a little asterisk next to it and say, hey, finish his career somewhere else. But there's so many of them, you just have to track them separately. So I think that was another thing that got him into trouble is – you know, you cash in on the Barnetts, the Cam Suttons, and Dobbs, and many others, but then you had a bunch of players that leave the program, and you get nothing out of those. So it was kind of boom or bust type. But I think Pruitt has to recruit at a high level and develop them. And I think that's the exciting part for Tennessee fans is I think they've already seen the development that was largely missing under Butch and his staff, but if you get those kind of level players, the five stars like Brooks, then you feel good that hey, they are going to get developed, and then we're going to win some games. So I think in terms of Brooks specifically, he's significant in a lot of ways. One is he is the elite pass rusher that Tennessee has been missing and coveting, and absolutely needs to win. This kid is special. You see his get off. You see his ability to bend off the edge, something that Darryl Taylor was really good at, only he's bigger and longer at 6'5", 220-ish. And he's still, his high school coach said, hey, he still has a lot of improving to do. He's just scratching the surface of what he could be. So that elite pass rusher that Tennessee has not had and desperately needs to get this level of talent, I think is massive. Two is you beat Alabama and Auburn.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So how'd they do it? How do you convince a kid that could have cherry-picked any big-time program that's having huge success right now? How did you get him to commit to your place than to go elsewhere? And like you said, the two biggest, you know, elephants in the room, pardon the pun, is Alabama and Auburn right there in his home state.
Yeah, I think a couple of things. One, Pruitt already has established relationships in that state. So that certainly helps you from that standpoint to at least get going. And they've made Alabama a priority, maybe not the biggest priority, but a priority. I believe that's five now that are committed from the state of Alabama in the 2021 class, including two of their higher rated kids, and Dylan Brooks and Jordan Mosley, who's from Mobile. So they've seen, hey, good state in the good year in the state of Alabama. We're going to go in there and take advantage of our relationships. T. Martin certainly helps in Alabama as well, since he's a Mobile guy. And then the other thing is the opportunity that they've got in being able to offer playing time and an opportunity to win. And here's the other thing. It's the fact that they were able to finish strong last year. As a number of recruits talk about this and how they're going in the right direction and the way they turned things around last year. If this team goes in the tank and they end up with a 4 or 5 win year last year, they're not getting, I don't think they're getting Brooks. I don't think they're getting a number of guys that are committed to them right now when 24/7 has them as the number 7 class in the country, number 2 in the SEC. So I think that it was critical that Pruitt had to show on the field results in the progression of the program. And I think it has opened some more doors. So, you know, look, I get the fan bases that lose out on elite players like that. LSU goes into Alabama too and competes with those Bama kids, and they missed out on Brooks also. So everyone's going to cry foul when they don't get the guy. So, but then when they do get a guy, whether it's from their state or another state, then it's squeaky clean. So I get all that discussion and all that. So I think those are some of the factors, but it's a massive get for Jeremy Pruitt and the staff, and we'll see if that leads has a domino effect on some other guys jumping on board as well.
More with Vince Ferrara from the Sports Animal in Knoxville. On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We continue here on Darren Donick and Chase with Vince Ferrara, his weekly visit as we talk the University of Tennessee and looking at the fallout from the draft. So, Vince, one of the guys who has not signed is Daniel Bettuli, a Nashville kid who we got a chance to catch up with last year at the SEC Media Days. He had a fine career for the Vols. What's next for him?
Well, got to give credit to Wes Rucker from Go Balls 24/7. He had an update last night, and it was obviously something that was speculated that he got red flagged during the process for his knees, and that was kind of a concern for some teams. I know Terry McCormick put out there that the Titans had some interest in Bettuli, but that knee concern was something that kept them from pursuing him. So during the social distancing right now, he really wasn't able to get that cleared up for teams to have that not be the concern. So the plan is that you know, hopefully in the coming weeks he's going to be able to get that tested and checked into and get that information to NFL clubs, especially the ones that have interest in him, and maybe get an opportunity. I think he will, as long as he checks out from a health standpoint. I think that's the case. So he did have some injuries while at Tennessee, and you know, even when he came back after his last knee injury, they still kind of did some maintenance with him and holding him back from practices, things like that, to make sure he was good during games. I think he'll get an opportunity as long as he's good health-wise. I know a lot of fans were surprised and upset that he didn't get drafted because of how productive he was and how he checks all the boxes in terms of character and intangibles and everything. He can play special teams also, which helps him. But, you know, this is kind of one of those things. It's the situation for him. And I think once he gets that cleared up, he'll get on with the team. The Titans would be one. And then I think so, another reporter put out there that the Cardinals had shown some interest. It wouldn't surprise me if when he gets cleared, it might be more. But he'll get a look, I think.
One of the things you can imagine, Vince, here is we're looking at the Titans and wondering what's next for Jadeveon Clowney. And we were all interested in how the Seahawks approach their draft. And, of course, Taylor goes to the Seahawks. So tell me your thoughts on that and how you think he fits in Seattle.
I think it's a great fit for Taylor there. One, he's going to be coached really well. Pete Carroll and his staff are terrific, and they obviously had a huge need at pass rush. Even with Clowney there, they didn't get after the quarterback enough. So there's opportunity there. He's going to play, I think, that Leo position, which is what Bruce Irvin plays, where mainly it's a fourth down lineman getting after the quarterback, but at times will stand up and move around. Well, that fits Daryl Taylor perfectly. I've said it during the process. I might have even said it to you guys, that I think Daryl Taylor with his hand down in a four down alignment is even more effective than him getting after the quarterback in a two-point stance standing up. And he certainly had some success at times standing up, but I think he just his first step, his ability to bend and still get after the quarterback on the corner, I think that's exactly what the Seahawks are looking for. Their other end is a first-round pick from last year from TCU and LJ Collier to go with Bruce Irvin there. And then, you know, they got a really good group of they have two really good defensive tackles there in Reed and Puna Ford. And then a really nice group of linebackers, their first-round pick in Jordan Brooks. Bobby Wagner and LJ Wright are longtime terrific linebackers as well. So they're building there, but I think it's just a really nice spot where he's going to initially be in a rotation, and then once he shows he can deserves to be on the field, I think he will play a lot as a rookie. I think it's a really nice spot for Daryl Taylor.
Vince Ferrara is with us, and Vince, Juwan Jennings gets taken in the seventh round by the 49ers. Was the seventh round about where you saw him going, or do you think he fell a little bit?
I wasn't surprised early in the process, Chase. You know, a lot of people were putting him in mock drafts in the third round. But the more I started to talk to people, the more I felt like, hey, he's a guy that with his questions, some teams are not going to have him on their board. And then certainly the combine and all his workouts didn't help him there. So you can't be in person with a guy that you want to get answers from and feel good about. Then the numbers at the combine, especially the 40 and even some other things, weren't there that you wanted. So now you multiply the concerns and issues for teams. I thought it was a lot for him to overcome. I thought he would be drafted somewhere in the later rounds. So honestly, the seventh round really didn't surprise me the closer we got to the draft and the more I learned. So, and even Kyle Shanahan admitted it, that, hey, he was a guy because of the combine is the reason why he was there. And the combine, those numbers, you know, that's going to scare some teams off. So they relied on his tape, and his tape is fantastic, especially the broken tackles, yards after catch. That's something that they covet. I mean, look at Deebo Samuel last year, George Kittle. You know, even their first-round draft pick, and Brandon Ayuk, he was a yards after catch type of guy also. So it's something that they covet. I thought they would be one of those franchises that would love that dog in Juwan Jennings, and they even spoke to that as well, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. So it's another great fit because that wide receiver group isn't the best. I really like Deebo Samuel, and you know Kendrick Bourne was really good, including in the playoffs. But they bring in Ayuk to get Jalen Hurd back, who they're really high on, and then you add Juwan Jennings in there. You know, they really don't have a lot of playmakers after that, losing Emmanuel Sanders. So it's a great opportunity. I think there's a really good chance he's going to make that team. He brings special teams value also. Lynch even joked that, hey, he can play safety. If the wide receiver, he can play safety. I mean, he's just a football player. I think he would if they said, hey, go you know, go over there, that group, he would do it. So, yeah, I think it's another. He was very fortunate. I know fans were very frustrated that he wasn't drafted. He's better than this guy, the Rhode Island wide receiver going before Jennings. Are you kidding me? And all this kind of stuff. But I try to tell people, don't get too caught up in that. If you end up with the right team, that's the biggest thing. And for Vols fans, if you get a Juwan Jennings even more motivated with an even bigger chip on his shoulder than he already has, in a really good situation with a great franchise like the 49ers, that's the biggest thing. It's better than going, you know, several rounds before that. I think it worked out great for him.
You have your blog at 99.1thesportsanimal.com, Vols in the NFL, and I know even some undrafted guys got signed over the course of the weekend, but just tell us some highlights about some of the Vols in the NFL.
Yeah, there's 38 of them right now that finished their careers at Tennessee. Like I mentioned, there's 8 more that were one-time Vols. New Orleans has the most in the NFL right now with 4 former UT players. The NFC West has the most with 8. D-line is the biggest position represented with 8 former Tennessee players. 21 of the 32 teams have a Vol on their roster, and I just kind of broke it down by division, and I think that helps you kind of look, okay, this team will play this VFL, play this VFL potentially, you know, twice a year. And obviously all these guys aren't going to be on those final rosters, but it is a position-by-position breakdown and look at some of the free agents and even a few Knoxville area guys that didn't go to UT. So there's just a ton of info in there. And I think with Callaway going to New Orleans, that's a super situation for him. You know, they're really good, obviously, with Sanders and Michael Thomas, but they need to shore up, and Tre'Quan Smith too, they need to shore up 3 through 6 or so on that team. Nigel Warrior going to one of the teams that his dad, Dale Carter, played for in the Baltimore Ravens. And then Dominic Wood Anderson with Seattle, and they like those tight ends that have skills but maybe weren't the highest rated guys coming out of college. So I think Batuli will add to that, but it's an interesting group, like I said, with a lot of walk-ons and a lot of Butch Jones. That's not walk-ons, I mean undrafted guys, and a lot of Butch Jones players scattered throughout the league.
I will wrap it up with this. Not a Tennessee guy, but a guy from the Middle Tennessee area, played at Vanderbilt, and now the Bucks, of course, the area you're from, take Keyshawn Vaughn. What do you think about that pick?
Thanks for asking me about that, because I've talked about him a little bit. I think it's a great pickup. I've always been a big Keyshawn Vaughn fan, and you know, liked watching him in SEC games, and then you know, enjoyed talking to him at SEC football media days. He's a chip on his shoulder. He's a versatile back that can do it all. I think with Ronald Jones the second there, I think he can be a nice complimentary piece. I don't know that he's an every down back in the NFL, but they don't really need him to be. The NFL isn't really going in that direction anyway. So you need a guy that you can put in every situation. That's not just strictly a third down back or not, you know, just a first or second down back. So I think he's a nice piece for that Bucs backfield that needed somebody to go with their starter, Ronald Jones. So obviously he's gonna enjoy playing with all the other weapons they've got there on offense. So I like to pick better than some other running backs that were on the board there for sure.
Vince Ferrara, the Sports Animal, WNML in Knoxville. Hey, good to talk to you, buddy. We appreciate it.
All right, same here. You guys stay safe. Enjoy the week. Appreciate you.
Will do. Vince Ferrara, you can check him out, 99.1thesportsanimal.com, and does a great job covering the Tennessee Volunteers. We will continue right along here on another Monday edition of Darren Donick and Chase. John Robinson, the Titans GM, coming up at 1 o'clock. Stay tuned. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Just pulled out of the duh folder. The Houston Texans are expected to exercise the 5th-year option on Deshaun Watson. There's some breaking news for you.
What? Wow.
I should have told everybody, pull over if you're driving. You're going to want to hear this.
Did not see that coming at all.
No. No, that was quite the shock. I don't know if Vince...
For those of you that don't understand sarcasm, that was a prime example.
It was radio sarcasm at its best. I'm not sure if Vince said this in the last segment, but he was talking about, of course, their big commitment they got over the weekend in Dylan Brooks, big defensive end, the five-star commitment. And also, I think during the break, there was word that they got a commitment from a four-star safety, Kamar Wilcoxon, who is from Bradenton, Florida. He's at IMG Academy. So Jeremy Pruitt getting more good news on the recruiting front, and it looks like the Vols are indeed getting it done on the recruiting front. Now it's going to be kind of like what we just talked about with Vince. Now what can they do with that talent? They're still a ways away, but they continue to compile talent, and then now it's going to be up to this coaching staff to coach them up. We're going to have John Robinson, Titans general manager, at 1 o'clock. Pecorine has been talking with the media this hour. We'll have a little bit of that for you in the final hour as well. But right now, let's talk about the Last Dance. We haven't had a chance to really hit on that here today because of the NFL draft. But episodes 3 and 4 last night, what did you think? What did you make of it?
I thought it was excellent, as we have come to expect with that. The thing that I think is getting a lot of run today is, and I think we're going to see more of it in episodes 5 and 6, is the relationship between Isaiah Thomas and Michael Jordan, and how Isaiah Thomas may have been penalized a lot just because of, you know, the bad boy Pistons teams kind of wore it proud, the villain hat. You know, they were the villains. They kind of liked that tag. They won 2 championships. And Isaiah, as a result, was left off of the Dream Team. At least that's one storyline. And we'll get more information, I guess, about it in episodes 5 and 6. But it was interesting, you know, the big moment that they showed last night is Chicago takes basically 3 years to get to the point where they can beat the Pistons. It took a while. They had to earn it. They come up with the sweep, and I remember this clear as day, the Pistons walking off the court with 7.9 seconds on the clock. It's one thing to slip out, and a lot of the guys don't shake hands, but, you know, in front of your home fans, getting up and walking off the court before the game is over, that's pretty shocking. I can't think of any other example that blatant. Can you guys in sports
are you talking about the Pistons leaving when they got swept by the Bulls?
Yeah, 1991.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but weren't they showing examples? I mean, the Pistons, that's their whole counter to this, of the Celtics did that to us.
But not with 7.9 seconds on the clock. They may have slipped out a little bit more, and they showed Kevin McHale being sort of grabbed by Isaiah Thomas, and they did shake hands.
No, Isaiah Thomas said that. He said the Celtics left before the game was even over.
He said that, but I don't remember that being. I watched that game too. I don't remember that being as big a storyline. It wasn't this grandiose, we're getting up and leaving the same way. And Michael Jordan kind of challenged that narrative by Isaiah Thomas. I thought what the Pistons did was a little bit more blatant.
I'm not going to repeat what Horace Grant said, but I kind of think that
it was
spot
some great
on.
TV.
I mean, Horace Grant didn't hold back of how they felt about it. Look, there's been a debate for years.
Michael certainly didn't hold back.
No, Michael didn't hold back either.
Nope.
He had no interest in seeing what Isaiah had to say. But there's been a debate for years about the handshake line and, you know, coaches, like in the NFL, Belichick shaking somebody's hand or Brady shaking somebody's hand. It was a bad look. And I can understand how that hate is still there today, but that was the takeaway for me was, you know, again, and I know I keep going back to this, but it's the truth. You know, I obviously was young, so learning a little bit more about the bad boys, you know, I've heard about the bad boys and seeing that, you know, in the Last Dance last night was, I mean, that was eye opening for me to learn even more about that rivalry between those two teams. And that shows you just how personal it got and how it was for them to still hold that grudge to this day about walking off the court and not shaking hands. I mean, I'd be upset too. I mean, I thought it was
noteworthy that today, of course, ESPN is doing a pretty good job. They know that they've got everybody's attention. Everybody's watching this. So their follow-up programming, Scott Van Pelt, right after it's over, and then on Get Up and some of the other shows that come on the next morning, they're doing follow-up insights, you know, getting reactions from the people that are in the documentary. It's pretty interesting. But Bill Laimbeer was very defiant in his reactions, saying, hey, I don't regret it for a second. We did it. That's how we rolled. That's what we did. I didn't like them, all of that stuff. Isaiah Thomas was a lot different, and that kind of surprised me. He wasn't as defiant standing by what he did. He's more regretful about it. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, let's be honest. Isaiah Thomas and Bill Laimbeer have had a little bit different paths after their playing days, right? I mean, Isaiah's been beat up. Is it fair to the Pistons doled out a lot of getting, you know, beating up their opponent. He's been beat up a lot, and I think it's his own doing.
I was about to say, doesn't he deserve some of it?
Yes, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
He's not done. He's had a lot of burnt bridges.
He has burned a ton of bridges. So, yeah, is it his doing? Absolutely it is. He has been beat up for two decades, okay? So I think there's a little bit of dog with its tail between its legs or its ears folded down. I mean, he's taken a lot of abuse over the years. Bill Laimbeer really has it. Bill Laimbeer's been coaching. I don't think Bill Laimbeer, while people hated him when he played, people don't feel post-playing days about Bill Laimbeer as they do Isaiah Thomas.
Well,
Isaiah Thomas
hits
worse.
A lot of different circles, too. It's not
yes.
just his playing days
Correct.
With the Pistons. If there were just that, then that would be one thing.
No but question.
The Knicks and the sexual harassment
yes.
and the CBA and tons and tons of stuff that Isaiah has been around
it.
With and that hasn't gone well for him, and he has not come out of there looking very good as a result.
100% agree. Exactly right.
When he coached at FIU, I was still at Middle, and they played at Murphy Center. And I went.
I forgot about that.
I hardly ever went to – no, you know, sorry to say this, but I didn't go to a lot of basketball games while I was at MTSU, but I went to that
one. We promised not to tell Kerman on you.
I know. I went to a handful, but I went to that one when they played FIU.
Isaiah hasn't helped
that?
Himself. I thought
I
Michael
totally forgot about that he was at FIU. That didn't yep. last very long either. Wow.
Well, let's be honest. A lot of things haven't lasted long for Isaiah Thomas. I mean, you know, he's done a lot of this to himself.
Didn't do TV for a while.
And
yeah,
you know
he,
what?
He was a lead analyst on the NBC games for a long time.
I thought Michael,
with Bob Costas.
I thought Michael said it best, honestly. I thought that was a real, real genuine answer. As in, he's right. It's not what anybody wants to hear. But he was basically saying, yeah, well, Isaiah can tell you whatever version he wants to tell you. The truth is, back then, his answer is totally different than what it is today.
And that's true. But how funny, I thought it was a hilarious moment where they played the clip for Michael as he's sitting there, and he's just got this look on his face. He's shaking his head. As Isaiah is saying,
that's what
like,
Darren's
you see what
talking
I'm saying?
About.
He's like, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was so he goes, he can say what he wants. That's
he
not
said,
how he felt.
There's no
at the time.
Way. I don't care what you show me. There's nothing you can show me that is going to change my mind. And I think that's a real genuine answer, right? I mean, there's no doubt in my mind he believes that.
Yeah. Well, and what's funny is, and Joe Rexroad was on with us this morning. We were talking about this on the rundown, and he made a. And I've noticed this, especially in episodes 3 and 4. Whatever Michael's drinking during this, the more he's had of that, the little more open he gets in some of the interviews. And I think that was one of those times during the interview process in the filming of The Last Dance. But you could tell he wasn't going to hold back. He didn't care what Isaiah had to say. And I don't blame him. I don't blame him at all. I don't blame Horace Grant for feeling the way he did. I think they all felt disrespected.
Isaiah has been littered all over the ESPN platforms today. He has been every show they have. I think they created shows to have Isaiah on today. And
hey, Isaiah's calling us, wants to come on. Do we want him?
He hasn't held back today. And I think, you know, he's been taking his little subtle shots today too, and that's fine. I mean, that's okay. I mean, I thought this morning on Get Up, it was a pretty good subtle shot. He's like, I love the way everybody's praising them for working out and lifting weights during the off season. He goes, yeah, that's what high school programs do. That's great. Isn't that what you're supposed to do to try to be a champion? Aren't you supposed to be doing that? And everybody's praising them for deciding to lift weights in the off season. So that was a pretty quick jab right there. It was a 1-2 pop to the nose of the face of the Bulls. But you know, there's probably some truth to that. Not that
you do have to admire the competitiveness, though. Back then, it's different today. It's still extremely competitive, but that is the one thing. You look at the scores that they put up there as the 1997-98 Bulls season goes along. There's a lot of 83-70 and 91-85. You know, it was a time where you had to earn your baskets.
Let me
say
from this
about 1987 to 1997, or maybe even 1999-2000, where defenses were really getting hard nosed, and it was hard to score.
But before we trash today's generation and today's game, we don't know how they would be if they were allowed to do that.
Remember, no question. It's just style. It's a style of play. It's the way the rules. Yeah. It's the rules,
right,
too.
They were allowed to do that. So we don't know. There are plenty of players in today's game that could probably do that. And maybe, honestly, they will be on rosters if could do that.
Different
today.
Players would flourish.
But you can't.
And different players would be brought in. It's just, you adapt to the rules. It's just
Rodman
like in
today,
hockey.
Though,
they decided they didn't want to have as many fights and they didn't want to have as much physical play. They've done a lot of the same things in hockey to open up the game and have more artistic skill.
They've done
the same
thing
in football.
The
NBA is the same way.
Same thing.
Football
All
is the same way,
today.
No question.
If they – remember – you can't some of the teams that we praise in football, it's because they had set up, they had set it up where you knew if you did a certain thing, you were going to be looking for your head when you got up to make sure it was still attached. Like, nobody does that anymore today, right? I mean, we just don't see those type of plays, so you don't have that mentality. Where back then, you had that mentality, okay, you come across the middle and see what happens. See what happens when you do that. And I hope your quarterback throws it to you. Right? Do you really feel that is, that's the mentality today? No. And I'm not saying one way or the other. I'm saying today's games, sports today is set up differently than back then. But we don't know if today's games, sports, allowed you to be like hockey back then, football back then, and in this case, basketball back then. If you could do that today, who would thrive and how would it look like that? I suspect it would.
Well, you think about the types of players that became really important players back then. Charles Oakley, Dale Davis, Anthony Davis. The Pacers had two guys like that. Anthony Mason for the Knicks from Tennessee State. I mean, there was a market for those guys, the bruising guys, Rick Mahorn. I mean, obviously the Pistons had a team full of them. Those guys were just fantastic at what they did. They knew how to win. They were tough rebounders, but that type of player is almost extinct now. It's all the guy that can get out and shoot the three, right? You got to play defense, but playing defense is a different thing. There's just less posting up. It's a very different style that works now.
Yeah.
While we're having this conversation, there is already a website that has a straight up blank shirt that you can buy. So I just want everybody to know that. Rotowear.com. You get a straight up blank Horace Grant shirt. Might have to buy that.
Is this a word that ends in hole?
No. Straight up witches, but.
Oh, that one. Okay. So that was Jordan that said.
Yeah, Jordan was
Isaiah,
the one. That, yeah.
Isaiah can tell you what he wants, but he was just.
Yeah, no. Horace Grant was the one that called the Pistons straight up B word.
You know what's interesting to me is the dynamic that we've talked about already. it obviously was not as prominent in episodes 3 and 4. It was actually pretty minimized, but episodes 1 and 2, it was there. Is just think about today. If players, I mean, can you think of any example of players that talk to general managers like that or treat general managers like that? I mean, just the blatant disrespect and just, you know, like, shoo, get out of here. You know, get out of here. You're a flea. Just poke him away. That's the way they treated the president and the general manager of the organization. Can you imagine
that's a
today?
Lot of interesting. There's so many layers to this. How about the whole Doug Collins evolving into Phil Jackson? That was really compelling stuff. You could tell Doug Collins was not. He defended his tenure there, right? He didn't really get on there a whole lot about how it ended. You know, he chose to sort of just defend what he did for Michael Jordan and for that team. He laid a lot of the groundwork, and then he steps aside. But the whole Tex Winters and, you know, the use of the triangle, getting Michael Jordan to think on a different level, making his teammates better around him, those were really interesting things about building a championship team. You kind of felt for Doug Collins, but you could see what they thought. And Jerry Krause is in the middle of all of that while he's always the guy getting abused by everybody around him.
And well, Jerry Krause was no angel in all this.
No,
I'm not saying he didn't
deserve.
Right. He brought a ton of this on himself. I'm not saying that he didn't deserve it.
But do they win those titles with Doug Collins? That's a great question that you could probably have a long discussion about.
No.
They eventually have won? No?
Well, eventually won. Are you asking me six titles or one title? There's a big difference.
I'm saying forget just they don't hire Phil Jackson. They keep Doug Collins on.
The resume doesn't look anywhere near the same.
You're saying no.
They won a title, maybe a titles, maybe a couple, but they're not winning six.
No.
They're not even close.
No, I agree.
Not even close. Mm.
It's a pretty I wonder if Doug Collins thinks he would have won the title eventually if they'd stuck with him.
Well, winning the title is totally different than a dynasty. Breaking through one time is completely different than being a dynasty. They were a dynasty in the sport. They're not in my opinion, they're not a dynasty under Doug Collins. Do they break through and win one? Yeah, probably. Probably a couple, but they're not winning six. Big difference.
Collins just was not as good a coach as Phil Jackson. You're a believer in the whole.
I think it was
cause,
more.
Because I think
than,
there's a lot. He made a really interesting case, Phil Jackson, about how he got everybody to more team, right? And then he got a lot of support. There were a lot of people that thought that he deserved a lot of credit. But back in the day, you guys remember a lot of shows we had about is Phil Jackson overrated because he always had all these great players.
Ridiculous.
But I think it kind of shows you the brilliance
exactly.
of Phil Jackson.
It's a ridiculous comment. I've always felt it's a ridiculous comment. Just ridiculous. Well, he had Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen. He had Shaq and Kobe. Well, no duh. Give me the dynasty teams that didn't have the Hall of Fame, the greatest, the GOATs. I mean, come on. It's just such a silly argument. How's Greg Popovich, who we've just, you know, praised forever? How's he looking right now? Now that he doesn't have those Tim Duncans of the world and David Robinsons of the world and all the greats that came through San Antonio. How's Greg Popovich look these days? I mean, it's just a silly notion. Well, he had them. Well, yeah, he had them, but you also have to manage that too. And there's a big art to that. And Phil Jackson was better than most, if not not all. He was great at handling a Dennis Rodman. He was great at handling those monster egos that are Kobe Bryant and Shaq and Michael Jordan. All right, we must break.
So you have to give you do have to give Jerry Krause if you're going
to
rip him.
We
if you're going
to
rip
break.
Him for
Willie,
we have to
we
break.
Have to go to
well,
the
break.
Break. Okay, John Robinson.
Okay,
to
we'll
kick
back
off
to
the
this.
Final hour. We can touch on this later on. John Robinson to start the fourth and final hour. That's next.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing, nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games. daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.